You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast on Thursday, March 1st, 2018. We are in March. Spring is right around the corner. I'm John B. from GangreneNation.com. As always, if you enjoy this show, please subscribe to it. You can do so on iTunes or Spotify, and the show will be delivered to your device each day so you can listen whenever and wherever you feel like it. And if you really enjoy it, please leave it a good review in iTunes. We certainly appreciate it. Wednesday was a big news day for the Jets, so instead of doing our normal Thursday mailbag show, we're going to talk about the developments from Wednesday, and assuming the schedule holds, we'll move our mailbag or weekly mailbag show to Friday this week. So unless something else comes up on Thursday, we'll do our weekly mailbag tomorrow to close out the week. And a big news day it was. A number of big transactions, expected transactions. I don't think these moves caught anybody by surprise. It was just a matter of when and what style these moves would happen. And the Jets cleared out $14 million or so in salary cap space. Again, this was money that you were counting on the Jets clearing out with a couple of transactions. One is the Jets released Muhammad Wilkerson, the defensive lineman who was twice a second-team All-Pro during his tenure with the team. He signed the big extension in 2016, and things just kind of fell apart from there. And then Matt Forte retired. I think most people thought the Jets were going to cut him. Forte retired. The cap impact is the same. The Jets save around $3 million against the cap. It's no surprise Forte retired, 32 years of age, and not really clear that there was going to be a lot of interest on him on the market. So we'll dive into these two moves, and we'll start with the one that has bigger implications in terms of a Jets legacy, and that is the release of Wilkerson. You know, Forte will be remembered as a Bear. We'll talk about him a little bit later in the show. But Wilkerson was one of the few successful first-round picks in recent memory for the Jets. The Jets, of course, had those two big-time draft classes, Mike Tannenbaum's first 2 years, 2006-2007, and really there have not been many successful draft classes since then under the three GMs the Jets have had, including Tannenbaum. 2011 is one of the few exceptions, and Wilkerson was the Jets' first-round pick. They had a late first-round pick in 2011 because they were coming off an AFC Championship game berth, and they ended up drafting Wilkerson, who, of course, was the defensive lineman out of Temple. And you can break Wilkerson's Jets' career into two parts. You can, and it's not two halves because there was a lot more good than bad, and that's honestly the sad part about the way this whole thing turned out, is that he's leaving on a very sour, very bitter note because of what happened over the last 2 years, when this was a very successful draft pick for the Jets. Five really excellent years. He was always solid, always a good starter, and there were long stretches where he was a star-level contributor for this team, and he was a guy, and it's not just me saying this. I mean, you can look back during Wilkerson's peak and see what some of the most respected NFL voices had to say at that point. You know, big-time writers who well-connected within the league. I mean, they were talking about Wilkerson as a guy who, he was not J.J. Watt. He was not on that level. He was not an all-time player, but there were lots of people who were telling you, of the big defensive linemen, the big interior type, the 300-pounders in the league, Watt's number one, Wilkerson's right below him. You can make an argument number two. He's in that next level. He was a guy who was perfect in the type of defense Todd Bowles and Rex Ryan both like to run, where he could move all over the line. I mean, he could line up anywhere on the defensive line when he was playing well. He could line up as an edge guy in a 4-3. You can slide him inside. He could work the five technique on a three-man defensive line. You could put him over the center on passing downs. You could put him over the center on non-passing. You could put him over the center on first and second down because he was an excellent run stopper in his day. He was just a tremendous weapon to have on the defensive line. And it all just fell apart. It, again, this was not a half-and-half type deal. There were five good to excellent years and then two horrible years. Wilkerson got the big contract in 2016. It was an acrimonious couple of years with the Jets. I mean, he was clearly very frustrated that the Jets were not willing to commit to him. And now you can kind of see why. Was it a case where he just got paid and lost his desire? You can never say for sure, but the thing about Wilkerson is it wasn't just that his play was bad, it's that the off-field stuff. And by off-field stuff, I mean, I don't mean that he was necessarily getting into trouble off the field, but it was in the locker room where three times over the last 2 years, the Jets benched him because he's showing up late to meetings. So it's not, you know, it's not just a case where a guy doesn't play well on the field, you know, the guy gets the contract. Sometimes it's a guy loses desire. Sometimes a guy just doesn't play well. Sometimes a guy loses, you know, his ability. Wilkerson suffered an injury late 2015, the last game of the season. During that first year, you wonder whether he hadn't totally recovered, but 2017, he was just as ineffective. And again, it's not just the bad play. It's one thing if you're just a bad play, is that he just seemed like a bad guy in the locker room between what I talked about, the lateness to meetings, the calling out some of his teammates in 2016. Look, the team in 2016 was bad, and there were guys who deserved to be called out, but Wilkerson was not the guy. Wilkerson was about the last guy who should have been calling anybody out during the season in 2016, and unfortunately, it seems like he and Sheldon Richardson, his buddy, they just kind of turned sour at the same time. Both guys, they looked like guys who were going to be cornerstones of this team for a decade, and then 2016, it just fell apart for them. Richardson was eventually traded before the start of the 2017 season. Wilkerson stuck around one more year, and it just did not improve. Really, when you talk about these last 2 years for Wilkerson, I think it reflects poorly on everybody. I think it reflects poorly to a certain extent on Todd Bowles, the fact that you had a guy who was a star-level player under Rex Ryan, star-level player even during Bowles' first season, fall off the face of the earth. And it wasn't just his play, it was his attitude. Bowles just seemed to struggle to get through to him. Now, part of this, we'll have to wait and see how Wilkerson does with his next team. Because if Wilkerson continues to act this way, play this way under a new coach, then I think you let Bowles off the hook a little bit. It may just be a case where the guy got paid and there was nobody who could get through to him. So we'll watch for that. I think at this point, it doesn't look great for Bowles. I think of the culprits, though, probably the least of them. It certainly does not reflect well on Mike Maccagnan. This was yet another contract gone bad, a big contract gone bad. And even though the Jets are saving $11 million against the cap, they're taking a $9 million cap hit in dead money in 2018. I mean, think about that's a lot of money to dedicate to a guy who's not on your team anymore. They are going to have Wilkerson count $9 million against their cap for Wilkerson to go play somewhere else. And the thing I always hear about this deal, I hear about a lot of Maccagnan deals, people say, well, at the time it made sense. You know, you get to say that when you're a fan, because I don't have a problem with the fan, you know, being optimistic about a deal at the time. Nothing wrong with that. I'm not going to hold that against somebody who wants to see the glass half full. You know, they like a deal at the time. They want to believe in their team. Nothing wrong with that. The fan gets to make that mistake. The GM doesn't. No GM's perfect. Every GM makes dumb moves. I mean, Bill Belichick's made some dumb moves. I mean, any front office guy is going to make some moves that you look back on, well, that was terrible. But the issue with Maccagnan is that it just seems like these have just been nonstop, these moves that have backfired. And yeah, some of them, you may have agreed with them at the time. You may have thought they made sense at the time. I certainly thought some of them made sense at the time. You're a fan, you get to be wrong. You're going to look at things. You're going to hope things go right. You're going to look at things with a sunny side sometimes. There's nothing wrong with that. You can't hold that against the fan for wanting to believe in their team. But when the GM gets this many things wrong, it doesn't reflect well on him. I'd be willing to look past this if more of these moves had been successful, but this was another big mistake, and there have been a lot of big mistakes. So certainly another strike against Mike Maccagnan. But above all else, and this is Maccagnan's, you know, number two. Bowles is number three, Maccagnan's number two. the guy this reflects the absolute worst on, and there's no question about this, and that is simply Muhammad Wilkerson, a guy who, again, at one point was a star-level performer on this defense, a guy who looked like 2 years ago he might go down as a great Jet, a guy who looked like he may be a Ring of Honor-type player for this team, a guy who could go down as a legendary performer, a great defensive lineman, who just fell off the face of the earth. Again, not just his play, but the problems he brought, the attitude, all that stuff. And there was a very telling revelation Todd Bowles made. He spoke to the media at the Combine, so did McCagnan. But Bowles had the revelation of the day. The Jets did not even ask Wilkerson to renegotiate the deal. And that's, does that not speak volumes? You may not think, let's just throw a number out there. Let's say it's something as small as, say, $5 million. Cut your salary to $5 million a year. That'd be pretty cheap for a defensive lineman. Even if you didn't think there was a chance Wilkerson would do it, there's no harm in asking him if that's what you think. That shows you the Jets did not want him back at any price. And that's quite a thing to say about a guy who just 2 years removed from being an all-pro, just 2 years removed from a guy the Jets wanted to give a big contract to, the guy the Jets wanted to make one of the cornerstone players of the franchise. In 2 years, he has destroyed all that goodwill. And he's destroyed his reputation with this franchise. You know, I don't know. I think we'll look back on it as a successful draft pick. Maybe with some time, maybe after we get a few years of distance, we'll look back and remember the good times a little bit better. Maybe Wilkerson will go, maybe he will go down as a great Jets defensive player. I don't know. Maybe we need some distance from these ugly last 2 years. But this seemed like a guy who was going to be here forever. It seemed like a guy who was going to be remembered fondly his entire career. And it is just such an ugly way to go out. And it's really sad to see a guy whose career started so well leave. And there's not even, I don't even think there's a lot of nostalgia for this right now, just because of how ugly these last 2 years have been. I think these last 2 years have soured the memory. And again, we'll see a few years down the line whether that's the case. But for now, you don't even feel sad at all that this guy's leaving. You're just kind of relieved. You were waiting for this day, and here it is. Now, in the other news of the day, there's another departure. Matt Forte retires, and Forte had a wonderful career. It's funny, we actually were talking about him a little bit on yesterday's podcast, and we were talking about the mistake the Jets made by bringing him in, and I think ultimately that was not a successful contract. But that's nothing against Forte. Forte had a wonderful career. The problem was that wonderful career happened before he was with the Jets. And if this was a Bears podcast, we'd be going on about his contributions to the franchise. Even if this was just a general NFL podcast, we'd be talking about the job Forte did, you know, his legacy as a player. And it was a great legacy. He just came to the Jets a few years too late for him to make a positive impact with the Jets. He goes out on his own terms, which I think is nice for him. He was going to be cut. And quite frankly, I'm not sure there were going to be many suitors left for his services. And, you know, he's been banged up the last few years, so his body probably was starting to betray him a little bit. And you could see on the field, I mean, you don't need to be an expert on NFL players to, you know, you don't need to be a scout to see how slow he looked on the field these last couple of years. So it's nice for him that he gets to go out on his own terms. And, you know, I was thinking he was a guest on this podcast a few months ago, if you remember. And there was one thing that I was thinking about on Wednesday when I heard about him retiring instead of waiting to be cut. And he was talking about his free agency 2 years ago and how there was a rumor that the Packers were going to be, you know, everybody seems to think he was going to the Packers, who were a division rival, who had seen him play for years. And he said something to the effect of, well, that wasn't going to happen because the Packers weren't interested. Really, the Jets were the only team that was interested. So if the Jets weren't interested in keeping him, you know, who was going to be? He's 2 years older, and over the last 2 years, he's kind of shown that his best days were behind him. So, you know, you have a lot of respect for the player he was during his career, and he was a fun guy to watch in Chicago. He just came to the Jets a little bit too late, so you wish him the best in retirement. Seems like a classy guy. I'm sure he has a good future in front of him in whatever he chooses to do going forward. So that'll do it. The Jets end up with around $14 million more in cap space on Thursday morning than they had at the start of Wednesday morning. So that's some good news. It was money that was expected. You know, when we talk about how much cap space the Jets are going to have heading into this offseason, heading into this free agency period, which now March is another, you know, we talked about March, the top of the show being the sign that spring was right around the corner. The first day of March also means NFL free agency is right around the corner. And when you're a team like the Jets that doesn't have a great roster but has a lot of cap space, that's also, you know, March is also a sign of renewal in NFL on the NFL calendar, because it means that we're not that far away from the Jets having a chance to improve themselves, having a chance to upgrade this roster and make their 2018 a little bit brighter than their 2017, or frankly, their 2016 were. And we'll talk plenty about that going forward in the days and weeks to come. Thanks for tuning in today. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you enjoy the show, subscribe to it. Options include iTunes and Spotify. And if you do enjoy the show, leave it a good rating. Hope you have a great Thursday, and we'll be back again on Friday to close out the week.